their brewery that also includes, like, sorry, the group of gamers who now own a brewery who make us in Ottawa for the Moose Machine Guys.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, support us.
A rare opportunity to get the real good shit.
Tim the Enchanter is now Tim the Godfather.
Hey, welcome to my podcast. Yes.
I feel like I should have a lounge act.
You're here at my event.
Anyone else?
Anyone else want beer, too?
I appreciate the respect you've been showing me coming to my event.
All right, we're good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay, guys, I'm going to get everybody to be quiet for a second.
Hello, I'm
Menoth John.
Welcome to Combos Night.
You're listening to Beer Machine.
Bonjour et bienvenue à Art 7, un podcast québécois dédié à War Machine.
Hello and welcome once again to another episode of the Scrumcast.
The beers are cold, the news is fresh, and the death clock starts now.
Recording live, not from E. Haley Memorial Studios, straight out of Hamilton, Southern Ontario, Western New York, and everywhere else in between. Oh, and we're not going to forget Quebec City. This is not This Death Clock Has 60 Minutes. This is the State of the Game Address.
This is a pretty big deal. Tonight, what we've managed to do... I think it's a pretty big deal. I don't know if you guys
agree completely.
Agree. What we've managed to do is we've managed to get somehow, by the power of Banky, all the podcasters that I think we know all in one room, which is pretty cool. And it's going to give us a chance tonight to sit and talk about the game. And there's been some big things that are happening right now, so I think this is an important conversation. It's a good time for us to have it. What we're going to do tonight for you guys who are watching live on the stream, you're watching through that computer down there. Hello. Sorry about the sound because we have to use the onboard computer, but it's not a bad room. But luckily, Rich from Beer Machines here. He's going to record this for you, and we'll put it out as a podcast within a week or so.
Yes.
So what I'm going to do is we're going to go around the table and introduce everybody. Unfortunately, my two cohorts from Moose Machine have buggered off because they're scared, I think, at this point.
Fair.
There's been some talk of, like WrestleMania happening. Let's go around the table. I'm going to start over with Menoth John. Introduce yourself and tell us which podcast you're from.
I am Menoth John. I am the podfather and the president for life of War Machine and Hordes.
Yes.
I run the original podcast from around this table. Anyway, Painting with Menoth John, seen live Sunday nights on twitch.tv/MenothJohn and on the YouTubes.
This is Phil. I'm from Quebec. This is from for the R7 podcast. I'm actually pretty nervous right now.
You're doing fine.
You're beautiful, Phil.
You're doing fantastic.
And your accent has got me transfixed.
That's right. Right. I think you've just been voted sexiest accent on this podcast.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is our competition.
He has the best beard.
At least
sure.
I do a better job than GP with the accent.
Whoa! You know what? Not wrong.
Art7, we're a Quebec-based French podcast, so I'm guessing most of you guys have never heard of us. But we're actually a pretty big deal back there.
He's a big deal in his own meta.
We're all a big deal in our metas. I am Nick from Combo Smite. We do a podcast every Monday on our website and Wednesday on Muse on Minis. And we do live streaming every Thursday on Twitch and YouTube.
For a not-corporate shill, you did a great job.
I'm pretty amazing like that.
Yeah, it's only my job.
You know how I can tell you work for the man during the week?
It's true.
Hi, I'm Greg from Party Foul, and we do informative videos on YouTube, and we're going to be starting a podcast shortly. Right after this, we're going to be getting a cable from Rich. We're going to get us fired up to do it.
I'm Daryl from Combo Smite. I am the salty member. I'm also not on screen, which is probably good.
You are a beautiful man, Daryl.
A little closer.
He's a man.
I am Matt. George told me to come in here. I don't.
Matt's currently one of our live streamers now. Yeah. He's a host of our live cast at the moment.
Yeah. Okay.
You play the game at least, right?
Yeah.
All right. That's good enough.
You're in.
The door was open, so we walked in.
I'm Fraser. I'm one of the hosts of the Trollblood Scrum podcast, as well as the Four New Gamers podcast.
Four nude gamers?
No. We keep our pants on.
Fucking amateur.
There's kids around. And also, I host a Home Machine in my basement every Tuesday.
My name is Mark. I am also one of the hosts for Combo Smite, and we do exactly what Nick says we do, so I don't need to say it again.
Oh, I'm Tim Banky, or Tim the Enchanter. I used to run a podcast called Arcane Assist. We no longer produce the podcast, but we do produce video battle reports every Monday, CID battle reports most Thursdays, and a bunch of other stuff. I'm losing my voice. This is an event that I mostly run. Matt and Agatha ran everything today. But on Friday, I had to talk to a bunch of people, and it's had this effect on me. So I should be pretty distinctive on this channel.
Fair enough. Last but not least, I want to introduce the guy who's going to be doing the mixing and all the work for this.
Hey, folks. This is Rich from Beer Machine. And this should be entertaining, I think, at the very least. It might get a little loud at some points. And I think you should have a gavel, Will.
Yeah, I think I might need one. So before we get started, we want to thank the guys from Crooked Mile for sending up three large growlers of beer. Rich, it would not be you on a podcast without some sort of review on the Black Dog Dry Stout from
Crooked Mile. Anyway, as I've been sitting here drinking it, there's absolutely no description on this, so that's
fantastic.
There you
go, right there.
Oh, there we go.
I brought it for you.
Right. Black Dog Dry Stout. This comes in at 4.6%, 41 IBUs, 32 SRMs. I don't know.
Not sure what that is.
Is that metric for IBUs?
Could be.
Maybe. Okay. This is a good stout. Like, it's straight ahead. It doesn't try to do anything it's not supposed to do, which is probably why I like it. Enjoy, guys. It's only 4.6, so like, start working on it.
Yep, pretty much. Pretty much these little snifters.
Streets ahead.
All right, so where we're going to start tonight is let's talk a bit about the introduction of CID. We're going to avoid the really contentious topic. We'll save that for a couple of questions down the road. But let's talk about the CID process and how we feel it's affected the status of the game in the last 2 months since the introduction of CID, since the changeover of how that works. I think we'll start with Tim, as a person that, you know, you've been involved in this type of process within this game for a while. Tell us a bit about the introduction of CID and how it changes what you do.
Yeah, so for context, I'm a judge and I've used to be a press ganger. So a lot of stuff that occurs internally when Privateer Press is planning a big change, they'll consult members of the judge program about the nature of that change. Steamroller Alpha used to go exclusively through the... used to go exclusively through the judge program before being released to Steamroller Beta, where it was open to the press gang. What you're seeing in the Steamroller 2017 CID is a lot like the preliminary version of Steamroller that the judges were handed. This is new. Obviously, this is different. But it, in terms of process, it's not that different from the kind of playtest feedback Privateer Press would collect from members of their team. It's also worth noting that stuff that we see in CID has gone through extensive playtesting before it even reaches our hands. And there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there about how they leave mistakes in CID to make people feel like they're participating. I don't buy any of that. Of course not. I think they're human, and they sometimes don't catch mistakes. And I think this process is very rigorous when it comes to finding those problems.
Yeah.
And it's important to reflect in this kind of this gaming community. We talk about the problems the Privateer Press misses and the erratas that have to happen with some urgency. But it's actually very infrequent. Huge glaring problems with the game that prevent it from being effectively competitive in the environment that we want, they're few and far between. It's a very, very extensively playtested game, and now they're inviting that playtesting community to be larger. So that's basically what CID is supposed to be about, and it's probably still a little early to say like it's had this effect on the game in a really permanent way, because we haven't played yet with any of the models that have been tested in CID. They haven't been officially released. We don't have any Grimkin yet. It's been a really like a big door opened in terms of communication with the company. Like, as a judge, the very first year that I tested the alpha for Steamroller, I played a rigorously tested, excellent version of Steamroller, and I was given the next year's one, and I said, the sky is falling. This is horrible. Everything about this is awful. I can't believe you're making these changes. This is going to destroy the game. Look at all of the problems in this document. And then week by week, and piece by piece, we tested them, we found them, we eliminated them, we removed them. And the version of Steamroller that came out that year, at the end of the alpha, at the end of the beta, that was released to the public after Privateer Press took it back to internal testing, was the best version of Steamroller that I've ever played. And that perspective, that something can be just awful looking, and then suddenly be the best thing that I've ever experienced in terms of its role in the game, has helped me keep a tempered response to CID.
I'm just going to counter to say that this is the worst thing that Privateer Press has ever done, and the sky is falling.
It seems fair.
And what a bag of dicks they are for doing that.
So let's actually open this up to the floor. Does anybody have a counter note or a positive note that can go along with that? Anybody? Go ahead, Benoth, John.
You know, it's something that I've been kind of talking a little bit with my other co-hosts and stuff like that, and one of the things that this is very well could be, there's a couple of different ways to look at it. One is they could be doing what I would call a converging style design, where they're essentially they put it out and they are trying to fine-tune through data. The other part that they could be doing is they could be doing exploratory stuff too,
they could be throwing some of these concepts out as a means by which to see how they might want to take the direction of the game in the future. So I think that I really, really am a huge fan of the CID because I think what it does is it provides such a larger amount of data that for them to crunch than they ever could have done through individual play testing. And, you know, we look back at Mark II. When Mark II happened, we went through the Mark II beta. Man, Mark II came out of the gates fucking good. And, you know, I think that if they had had this idea ahead of Mark III, the transition to Mark III would have been a lot more solid, too. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really neat. I think it's got the chance. The CID process has restored my faith in Privateer as a company to a large extent. Hmm. I felt the game had become moribund, and I don't believe that they were necessarily doing a good job of their homework. I think the CID is going to augment the horsepower of developing for the game beyond that little group of people that they have sitting in a room in Bellevue.
Does anybody else have a counterpoint to that? Or another side? Yeah, go ahead.
So my only concern, and I agree, what they're doing is fantastic. My only concern is to make sure that they're not necessarily making change to the game overall to make certain people happy.
Oh, absolutely.
So what I want to see is once we see what's gone through CID and has gone into production, for lack of a better term, we see what was the feedback that was given and compare what they took and what they didn't. Because I don't want them seeing if there's a very small vocal minority that are saying we want the game one way, and they cater it to that. So that's my only concern. I love what they're doing so far, but I just want to make sure that they're not necessarily going down for that, like I said, that vocal minority.
I'm going to hand it over to Tim Banky.
If I can respond to that point briefly, Fraser, I was just going to say, I think that's a tension that occurs that's worth acknowledging. Privateer Press, like a lot of people have said, like, we've provided all this feedback, and they're not listening to us. Yeah. Or... like, they're not responding to us in the way that we expect them to respond to. And I think what you're seeing a lot is amateur playtesters and professional developers. And sometimes the feedback that you see is really clear. Like, someone says, like, I hate that this works like this. And, you know, the response is often, Will Pagani jumps on there and says, don't respond like that. It can give you an infraction, first. But thank you for being passionate and involved. Second, that's not the kind of feedback we need. We need you to give us data that backs up the problem that you're seeing so that we can look for a way to engineer a proper solution. So I don't think this is ask and ye shall receive. This isn't Christmas from Privateer Press disguised as a community integrated development process.
It's not designed by community.
Absolutely not. And Privateer Press isn't outsourcing their development, which is another criticism I've heard. They're, in fact, engaging in a much more challenging development process. And to John's point, I think, to coin a term, it's if anything, it's a composite process. It's a combination of that impressive collection of data that you describe and the like exploratory process. Both things are very present, and I imagine their minds.
I'm just going to open it up to the floor one last time, and then we'll move on to the next topic. Anybody got a comment? Matt.
Hi. I think the problem most people have with the CID forum, specifically in the process, is that the loudest voices are always the negative and the complaints. And typically speaking, the people that have these complaints don't play test the CID very often. They see an issue, and they immediately hop on it. In our playtest group, this is something we experience a lot. We have people constantly telling me how bad something is. Contentious points aside, we all know what they are. These issues aren't some super serious thing that we need to jump on and be hyper aggressive about. They know what the issues are in the initial set of data. And once we discuss them, they have solutions. They talk about what they are.
Well, to bring that back, I think we can all agree that there is concerns on how it works. I think actually hearing from you, Tim, a much more level-headed way of looking at it kind of might help some of you that are watching the podcast understand to a different degree. And I think we all have valid concerns. What I want to talk about next before we really get into the biggest... There's one more thing that we'll talk about, which will take some time. Let's talk about that introduction from going from Mark II to Mark III and some of the mistakes that were made, that we felt were made with the introduction of Mark III that may have spurred on the CID process. I think some slight flaws in the game were identified early on. Did that lead to the CID? How do we feel about the transition of Mark II to Mark III? Was everything sort of caught and fixed? Anybody have anything they want to say along those lines?
I've been so distracted by Fraser's miming of a bottle opener request.
Send me beer.
I want beer.
There is another bottle open. It's the Crooked Mile.
Yes.
Standing Stone. This is their silver medal winner for the
Give
Ontario
me beer.
Beer Awards.
So that was Aggie, by the way. The next one we have from Crooked Mile, Standing Stone English IPA. Light in color but bold in taste, this ale has an assertive hop flavor that showcases the floral and earthy quality of British hops. 6.2%, bitterness 53. Oh, SRM is the color scale. I was not familiar with that. English IPAs like really have a nice floral nose to them. It's kind of fun. Sometimes it's a little overdone because people cram hops into beers these days, it's like to be special, and I don't really get why. Mm. But this is fantastic. Mm. This is good.
One of the things about Crooked Mile, just because we're talking about this, sorry about this, guys. One of the things that they really stand on is they don't believe in hopping the crap out of everything. They want
hallelujah.
They want that like somewhere in between type of level. So, anyways, let's pass it out to Ford. Let's talk about that transition from Mark II to Mark III. The concerns were brought up. Were mistakes made? And has the game recovered?
I'll jump in on this first. I think, and I'm not trying to like call them out as like straight up lying to my face or anything like that. I'm just trying to. This is an observation. I strictly do not believe 3 years happened. I think it was probably a year, and I think, granted, they're human. Granted, mistakes were made. I think maybe they pushed up their design cycle to counter what they probably thought was coming from another game manufacturer. And we're seeing that this year with 8th edition and 40K. Maybe it was the right thing to do. Maybe it wasn't the right thing to do. I'm not sure. I'm overall happier with Mark III than I was in Mark II. For the record, I was not a Mark I gamer, so I can't comment on how it's progressed. A couple things.
Rookie.
I know, right? I'm sorry. I played 40K back in the day. I was.
Jesus, is that supposed to get you off the hook?
No, it actually makes me more guilty, I think. I mean, I like where it's going. I just, when I heard 3 years and we started seeing what's in the book and how things are interacting, and I'm thinking, no. Well, you guys did your work. It's not 3 years. There's no way.
The thing is it could be 3 years if they spend one afternoon a week doing it.
Mm. That is entirely true.
I think Greg had his hand up.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I felt that it came at the right time. At that point in time, the game felt incredibly stagnant.
Yes.
And very dead.
Yes.
And so, as a player, it came at the right time to make it more interesting again. Certainly there was mistakes, and it certainly became a joke that the whole 3 years nonsense, but I don't think the transition was that bad. I think as a player, it was still exciting.
Yeah, the transition was good. Like, I'll never forget standing in line at Lock and Load, waiting for the book, waiting for the rules, and get there, and like John and I sit down, and we start playing Mark III. And there wasn't a "uh-oh, what do we do?" moment. You know, it felt very natural,
mm-hmm. And it was.
I'll
there
never
was...
forget that keynote.
you okay? Because some of us did.
I blinked and missed it.
There was still enough continuity between Mark II and Mark III
up
as well.
It.
Yes,
that it still felt very much like the same game, and there wasn't any sort of like loss in terms of the player.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just going to hand. Actually, Philippe had his hand up, so I'll hand over the mic to him. Philippe, if you just lean in your mic a little bit, that'd be great.
Like this?
Yep, yeah, perfect.
All right. There was a lot of blunders at the beginning of MK3. I mean, the keynote.
It was a keynote?
Yeah. It's a footnote now, but the whole gang and knockdown thing.
I mean,
when it happened, it was a bit like, what's going on here? But what's important is that they gave themselves the tools to actually fix those problems with the CID and the dynamic updates. So I'm confident, but to me, it kind of feels like we're not really playing the real MK3. I mean, like, in a couple of years when every faction was like 5 team force, I think it's going to be closer to what... Well, we'll see.
I'm going to send it down to the end of the table.
With respect to the keynote not being that fantastic and the Mark III release being different, I think a lot different in quotation marks.
Being polite.
I think a lot of that was caused by the leaks. Mm. All the spoilers, it killed the keynote. And I think it killed their big reveal. It killed learning of the game. Like learning of Mark III.
Trying to do the translations,
the transition. Killed it all. Mm. So like because of that, we lost a lot of the fanfare for the transition. Mm-hmm. And I think it actually contributed to some of the negativity we have now with the CID.
Interesting.
I had a second hand up from Banky, sorry.
If I can engage in inappropriate cross-examination for a moment.
Oh, please.
Rich, how many factions are there in this game?
A lot.
Give me a number.
I believe it's 13.
It is, yeah. How many models are in each of those factions?
A lot.
So if I spent if I spent a day or two on each model, how many days is that?
I'm going to ballpark this and say 2 years.
So if I then, after having proof of concepted some really core issues and gone back to the drawing board on a couple of really major things and introduced a couple of concepts to the game that weren't present before, after learning a lot about the needs of those models, would it be fair to say that it might take me another as much as a year to finish that game?
Sure, sure, it might, yeah.
So my notion is that 3 years of playtesting sounds like a lot when you say it out loud and say, like, wow, if they tested Bradagus for 3 years, how come he came out like this? But they didn't test Bradagus for 3 years. They tested Bradagus for 1/13th minus the portion of the faction he represents, which is minute. Mm-hmm. I mean, testing just the casters for 3 years is a tiny amount of time. We're talking about the CID process where we're testing, you know, Banes for 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, there wasn't that depth of time or that breadth of community involvement. Mm-hmm. So I totally believe the Mark III was playtested for 3 years, and I don't think it was released promptly to compete with another game system's competitive edge. I just don't think you have that wherewithal as a game.
I mean, they also had to keep up normal business practice. They also had to keep up normal business practice at the same time. So it's an addition to everything else they were doing.
I mean, people, members of the development team were pulled completely off of their traditional projects to work exclusively on Mark III. But, I mean, and I know, partly because I know some of the people involved in the process, that the initial intention was to release no information about Mark III whatsoever and to have the keynote be, by the way, here's Mark III, please go buy all of our product. And members of the Privateer Press staff who were involved in retail support said, this is going to be a huge problem. Like, you're going to have retailers up in arms about this. You're going to have the player community really upset about it. You need to stagger that release and give some lead time for distribution. And there were significant blunders with the way that the rollout was handled. But I don't think the design of the game was flawed in a particularly core way. And I feel like the timeline on which they fixed the most major issues was, if anything, more aggressive than the timeline that they fixed some core issues that were present in Mark II. We had a long period of time.
I'm going to send it over to Manoth John.
Please do.
The problem I actually had was not necessarily the issues with, let's say, the game. Okay?
Right.
Because I thought the Mark III was a pretty okay rule set when it first came out. My issue was the disservice that they did to the community by invalidating the core rule books literally within a month of the release of the game. Mm-hmm. Now, here I have this big, shiny, new hardcore book that now we've changed. I can't remember exactly all the rules that changed, but it started to invalidate having that as a rule book. Then they sold everybody card packs, and then within the first year turned around and basically eliminated the usefulness of cards. And so I think that the biggest flaws in the release, and then on top of that, you had, they obviously did not stress test some of the models, like the Mad Dogs list, where they stress test spam issues. People caught up on it, and you know what? I'm sorry. If you went out and bought 14 Mad Dogs thinking that that was going to be okay forever, then you may have made a bad purchasing choice. Yeah. But I think that led to this momentum of PP doesn't know what it's doing, PP's out to, you know, PP's got a closet full of this stuff, they're going to do something weird to it and make it everybody sell. So I think that, for me, was the bigger mistake with Mark III.
And right on the tail of that, Unit 2 comes out. Yep. Right on the tail of that, Unit 2 comes out, and she was pretty bad for the game. It was basically back-to-back.
Absolutely. I'm just going to send this down to the end of the table, because you had a comment. And then I think we'll take this as a last comment, unless anybody has anything that they want to volunteer for.
The Salt Father here. I don't think that the quote-unquote invalidation of the rules and, you know, Mad Dogs and things like that is Privateer Press's fault. That's the player's fault. Right? Why did the rules have to change? Because we complained.
Shots fired.
We said, this is completely egregious. It's broken. We can't play the game. 3 years, my ass. Like, you did this. Look at the forums. There's a reason why they're gone. The internet is there. It gives people a voice. Not everyone deserves a voice. Should use it?
Just to clarify, are you being salty about the notion of being salty?
He's meta-salt. It's meta-salt.
The point I'm trying to make is putting the blame for the quote-unquote invalidation of the cards and the rule books isn't necessarily Privateer Press's fault. The community demanded change now. Mm. When it was given to you, They then bitched about having the books that they bought invalidated.
So I don't.
So
I don't
it's
know
a no-win situation for Privateer Press.
I don't know if you're familiar with this, but the War Machine community is fairly vocal.
Yeah. any gaming community is vocal, but when you ask for something,
yes.
you get it, yeah, and then complain. There's no pleasing you.
Yeah.
No, so there isn't.
How does that endear them as a company to deal with you?
It's a difficult situation to be in because it's a catch 22, and I think in any of these cases, we as for best purposes, we have to be the level-headed ones as people in this community that are the vocal people, part of this community. It's important for us to play both sides. Our podcast has George, and he's just he's got his complaints about things too. I try to be the middle of it and love Jason to death. He's the one that argues that everything is great and all is awesome, and I'm going to play Crix.
Delusion.
It's part of that thing that we also have to find those balance points, and we have to take a look at the greater community and make both of those points. And I think you both actually have quite valid points. One, that it is the community does drive that, and two, that unfortunately the community is also the one that's going to be upset when that changes. Go ahead.
Tim Banky, undefeated with Crix today in Masters. Daryl, can I just clarify the point that you're making a little bit?
Sure.
So, to be clear, are you saying that you feel like there were problems present in the game and the player community's desire to have them remedied quickly makes their criticism of the products that they're then invalidating a little bit false? Or are you suggesting that there weren't actually problems, but that the players complaining about things and Privateer Press changing them is just a response they're making?
No, that there were problems with that, what players perceive as problems, because when we all play the game together, if we perceive something as a problem, then it is. We're the ones playing the game. If as a community we're saying this is a problem and we want it fixed, and they do fix it, we need to take ownership of that. If them repairing whatever error it was results in a purchase, normally a book or a card, being no longer accurate or invalid, realistically speaking, we should be happy about that because we asked for something and we got it.
Mm. Okay, so just to use an example, the counterpoint. If I'm Privateer Press and I put Una in the world and she's really, really powerful, one response is just leave it there, players deal, don't answer their questions, don't respond to their emails, and just that happens for a long period of time.
That actually sounds kind of familiar.
Mark 2?
Well, I mean, it certainly was the case in Mark II for a lot of things, and it's definitely the 40K model for a lot of years, is they would say, your D-weapon artillery is fine, just keep playing it. And then the community would say, like, oh, if you're going to play a cheese list, then I'm really upset with you. It seems like what your point is that based on community feedback, correct me if I'm paraphrasing incorrectly.
Okay, go ahead.
Based on community feedback, Privateer Press has chosen an approach that involves fixing what players perceive as problems, which aren't literally ending the world. They are, in fact, just things that some games choose to cope with. And if we want a game that feels rigorously rebalanced in its perfect state of imbalance, we have to accept that sometimes our books are a little out of date.
Yeah. That's exactly my point, more or less. This is why on our podcast, on Combo Smite, Nick puts things in English and non-salt language.
So, I do my best to translate Daryl into English.
Yeah. You are doing
so. It's exactly that. If we want things changed for the better, what we perceive as better for the game, and Privateer Press does that with hopefully proper feedback and data, then one of the quote-unquote casualties of that are going to be things that we purchase in terms of rules.
You said you were salty. That sounds really articulate and well put.
You're okay. Not nearly drunk enough.
Just one last comment. Yeah, one last comment.
Clock is right twice a day, Tim.
I'm just going to put a stop there. One last comment.
Mark 3 at no time changed the way I paint my models.
That is, there you go.
True.
Very true.
So applaud. I think I'd like to get into the nitty-gritty of it. I think we're going to feel a bit more passionate about this, and we're going to talk about the way that Privateer Press has dealt with the community and the way that they've dealt with the idea of the amount of measuring tools and tokens that can be on the table. And this is where things...
Are we touching?
Shots fired.
We're going
to... Hang on, this requires a beer update before we open.
Yeah, let's do a quick beer
update. I'm just going to back away from the table. Yeah. This is courtesy of Fraser. This is Strong Patrick from Bose Brewing Company in Van Cleek Hill, Ontario. I've had a few things from these guys. They're fantastic. It says, Strong Patrick, a.k.a. Fierce Patrick, to our American friends. I don't think I've ever used the word fierce, like to describe a beer or at all, but okay.
We'll get on it.
Is luscious and malty, toasted caramel and toffee notes, complemented by whiskey flavors and alcohol warmth. That's what we call boozy sometimes.
Hit that man.
Part of each batch has been aged in whiskey barrels and then reintroduced to add subtle wood and vanilla. The Irish Red Ale is rounded and balanced with a pleasant overall character. Comes in at 6.7. So we're getting up there.
I'm really looking forward to your continued beer descriptions.
We've actually brought these.
As you get more drunk.
We brought these.
I usually start talking smack about them like toward the end.
Rich, we brought these Milwaukee's Best for you because we figured that.
Oh, you guys are the
worst. That is not Milwaukee's Best. That is not Milwaukee's Best. That's Old Milwaukee. There's a difference.
I'm going to guess they taste about the same.
All right. So I will.
On the way down and back.
I'm going to preface this because this is going to be a contentious topic. I am going to try to keep everybody's comments and concerns down to about 2 minutes. And if it gets too heated, I'm going to raise my hand. And I expect at that point that you just try to tailor off and finish your comment. Now, I'm not going to moderate this too much.
That's delicious.
I'm going to let you go. But we're going to go around the table. And finally, if you don't want to comment, don't feel that you have to. I can understand that some of us feel that we don't want to create a negative impact on our podcast, and this may create it. Most of us don't, but feel free to be as honest and open as you want to be or not say anything. We won't concern you. I'm going to start, actually, at the other end of the table first, since we've started at this end of the table to start with. Let's go over to Aggie first. Most of us would know you from many of the podcasts here because you've appeared guest starred on a lot of them.
Whether we asked you or not.
Aggie is a judge and has been pretty much like the day that everything changed is the day you became
a judge.
It's
true. I was the first Mark III judge.
The first Mark III judge. And so moving forward, as you've dealt with Mark III and this big change, talk about it. How did it happen? How did you feel as it came about?
It felt inevitable in a lot of ways, which is fine. Again, the whole stagnancy and et cetera. The convenient thing for me was that the Mark II rules were complicated. They actually, and I probably have more of an intimate feeling of how much the Mark III rules were simplified because I had to study them endlessly. But there's a lot of elegance and a lot of refinement that may or may not be obvious to a lot of people. But rules are simpler. Like, going to an event now, the judge calls aren't that complicated. That's partially proxying, partially the rules are more elegant, they make more sense. It makes all of our lives easier, players and judges and organizers notwithstanding. There's less arguments, and that's a good thing.
All right, I'm going to stop you there, because the topic is the new pre-measuring and token rules.
That includes that.
It includes that. So as a judge, you feel that that's helped simplify things?
It does. It simplifies rules in a lot of ways, I think.
Okay.
Not our old system, not the new system.
Okay. We're going to come around the table. So
you're saying as it was presented?
As it was presented in Mark III.
In the book.
The first question on my judge exam was, what can you pre-measure? Anything at any time. Why should it be more complicated than that?
Right. And as for the CID and the changes in the way that you can tell how many tokens you can put on the table and how much you can pre-measure?
There have been games where it has been probably too far that you can plan out an entire turn, spend 40, 45 minutes on it, have everything planned out, and then it happens, you know, you've paused the game and then you're suddenly on, and then you've paused the game again, and then you're playing it like a video game. And is that wrong or right? Who's to judge that? Some people want
apparently
that. Some people don't want that. Exactly, right?
Apparently it's a guy named Jason.
The game is defined by the community, right?
Or from the top down.
There's problems with either way. Some people are going to see it one way and some people are going to see it the other way. But there's no right or wrong in that, and I don't think. And I think it's part of the TOs to say what their community, what their meta wants. The problem is, at national or international events, what does that mean? Is there going to be clashes? Because the Europeans will run with two proxies versus the Americans running with five proxies or whatever that means.
That depends on the metric conversion between proxies.
Are we going to have different variants?
I'm going to get you to wrap it up.
And that's going to be the question is, are we as community organizers going to bring our own variants into play beyond Steamroller?
It's a fairly level-headed response, so I think this is a perfect time to bring in Greg.
Best transition ever.
Well, I think you might find my response a little more level-headed than you expected.
Oh, what?
It's because he's in person and not behind a monitor.
That's right. It's not Internet Greg. I think it's perfectly in PP's right to decide how they want the game to be intended to play. And if they don't want the game to be a muddle of proxy bases and shit on the table, then I think that's perfectly legit.
My turn.
I can understand there are like some really competitive people and they think that it makes it a cleaner game. I don't necessarily agree with that. I played 8 games this weekend and I think there was once where I used steppers. Every other time it came down to just, you know, put down a proxy base, ask my opponent, did he agree? If he didn't, well then we call the judge over. And they decided. I mean, I don't think it's necessary to like throw down a ton of widgets and stuff like that. I think it's just messy. I think, you know, I don't necessarily think it's Jason Soule. I mean, yes, he's the lead designer, but I don't think he's like manhandling this thing. So that's just like
the only thing he manhandles is a keyboard.
I'm pretty sure that the company and the team are behind him on it.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Yeah, I'm sure they are.
So let's hand it over to Nick. Nick, what do you think? We're going to go around the table so everybody gets a chance.
Don't fail me, Nick.
I mean, I certainly agree that it's their game and they have the right to like, to say how they want to play. But like, but we don't have to agree with that, right? I mean, like we've gotten used to playing the way it is in the book, and I think the majority of the community likes it that way. I don't know. That's subjective.
But the original book was designed by community members.
Was it?
Well, Hacksaw.
Well, what's the original book? That's
like
probably
steamroller.
What original book you're talking
about? Defining the steamroller as a tournament format was defined by community members to begin with and then evolved over time and with communication with PP and the community.
It's true that core design approach and community participation are a collaboration. Sorry, Nick, please finish your point.
But I mean, I like being able to use proxy bases. I think it helps me plan more tactically as an average player. So I can pull off stuff with access to multiple proxies on the table that I might not have been able to do otherwise. Limited to one in particular. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I would want to do on the table that I wouldn't be able to necessarily measure with the precision that would let it happen easily.
Give me an example.
I need diagrams and stuff. I'm not going to talk about that.
Playing RAN.
There's lots of examples, though, where there's a whole thread on the C80 forums about examples where this is true. And there's a lot of good, valid examples. And if you really want to know, go check out the thread.
I'm actually going to bring an example live from the chat room. Grubnat says, I think some issues with the table markers being limited is that it hits certain models more than others. When you try to plan out a gangfighter flank, you usually need more than one table marker.
Good example, maybe. And I don't need 10 proxies. You know, there are some players out there that really take it super far. And it becomes a problem sometimes when they lose track of what proxies are what and stuff. And there's examples of people that are like attacking proxy bases that aren't actually models and stuff. Yeah. At least rumored examples of this. I know. Yeah. I wasn't there. But I mean, the most complicated thing I can think of that I would ever need to do, I need like 2 to 3 proxies or something like that. And that's like kind of enough. So it's just the one that kind of bugs me. I'm totally okay with Privateer Press limiting it. Like that.
All right, let's go over to Philippe. Philippe, the interesting thing I think we could comment here is that, and you might be able to comment on it a bit better, being part of a completely different language puts you in a completely different meta. Mm-hmm. Because you speak a different language, you're not your meta is not necessarily involved in whatever the discussion is that's happening outside of it. And I mean, they are to a certain degree, obviously.
Right.
But that also, as I've experienced handling different languages, it often changes the way that the game is played. How is the French meta handling this, and is it the same feelings?
It's very similar to what's happening in the U.S. Most people don't like it. There's a couple of people that are saying, oh, it's a good idea. Most of the people that don't hate it don't care. That's the issue. So they're just like, I don't mind. It's not going to change the way I play. Personally, most game, it doesn't change anything. But that one game out of 10 or 20 or whatever, it's going to piss you off. I just don't like the idea. I don't feel it's necessary, basically. Nick was saying that as an average player, some of the stuff, you know, you can basically play better because of it. I just started playing Ran in Retribution, and I have no idea I'm going to play him with only one proxy, honestly. Matt, I'm just not that
really
good.
Like Ron, so you shouldn't.
Yeah. Hey, Ron!
Cheers, guys. So let's go to Menoth John, actually. It's a good time.
You know, we talked about it on the show, which is Painting with Menoth John, seen Sunday nights on twitch.tv/MenothJohn.
It wouldn't be a guest show without you saying that.
Yeah, so we talked about it on the show, and I guess the thing that we kind of came to, you know, remember, Painting with Menoth John is some of your higher level competitive players. we're badasses at the table. Just ask us, and we don't have a. We kind of talked about it, and where we netted out was that we didn't think that we needed much more than one. Now, that is because the three people around that particular table are more interested in drinking and high-fiving each other during the course of the game than actually winning anything, because, quite frankly, I'm uncompetitive. And, you know, for people who, you know, probably take this game a little more seriously than we do, you know, I can see some limitations. But at the end of the day, I think you make a good point. They have the right to tell us this, because that for the longest time they told us you couldn't do any of this shit. And if they want to tell us that it's now this game is designed to be used with one, then, you know, probably we ought to be using one. But that's okay.
We'll send it back to Philly.
If I may, one of the things that's bothering me right now is that the rules don't seem all that clear. Maybe it's a language barrier, I don't know. But
it's not the language barrier. There you
go. So, I figure that when they clarify it, it's going to get easier and we'll eventually know what's happening. But
I
right
agree.
Now, one of the things that I'm worried about is that you're playing and somebody calls a judge because he thinks you can't do what you're doing, but you think you can.
If the CID goes through, that's the other problem. Yeah. I think that we need to reflect on that before we continue, is that we have to remember that this entire discussion is completely mental, because none of these rules are in place as of yet. These are literally just rules we're testing, and we talked a bit about how it could just be a litmus test for how the community will feel about these changes. So putting that into perspective might help some of the people who listen to the podcast after the fact, and why people might be so contentious about it. So, Rich, how do you feel about the whole thing?
It's interesting, and I'll say it like this. It's everyone has their own theories as to why this is happening, and I think it's a separate discussion, but it bears some thinking about just on your own time, I think. Besides that, I'll give an example. I played Dave Beauchamp earlier today, round one of Masters. Dave is an extremely clean player. He's also extremely good. and I'm very happy that I got him sweating by the end of the round. Even though I lost, I'm happy. That being said, he had to do a lot of things running Iron Mother very precisely. And one of them involved leaving a 120 mil proxy base for the Prime Axiom where it's going to end up later on. If he couldn't do that, it would have been very questionable if he could have done a lot of other things maneuvering around it. I didn't have a problem with this at all. Sure, it took up, there was maybe a few minutes, and he didn't play his whole turnout. He did maybe kind of a 3 or 4 minute pantomime, kind of, I guess is the best way to describe it, like each turn. Now, overall, it did affect him. Of course, he ended up winning the game. There's no way I'm going to beat him, but I came close, and he paid for it on his clock. He ended that game with a minute and 30 seconds left. I had about 12 or 15. I think it didn't negatively impact the game, and he had probably, at any given time, I'd say he had about 3 or 4 proxy bases out, and I thought it was fine. Now, if someone's watching this game and they see him sitting there thinking and measuring and more or less talking to himself with bases out, they may say, what is this nonsense? Like, do something, you know, if they don't play. I understand that does affect things like people getting into the game, therefore affecting sales. I get it. It doesn't mean I like it. I like how it is. But then again, I'm not the giant player base, and I think Greg's about to interject there.
No, it's something really quick. I kind of object to the notion that if you to be a clean player, you have to play with like a million fucking proxy bases.
Oh, no. I'm not saying.
I'm not saying it's just you, Rich. I'm saying I get this feeling from the community that if you're a clean player, you like put a billion proxy bases on the table and take forever.
Oh, no, I agree. That is absolutely not true. It just, I think it does help.
Yeah, I think that's the point, that it does clean up the game. I'm going to go to Tim, because I think you've definitely got a look on your face of the godfather of the SOO must speak.
My apologies. So, I mean, some of what I think we experience is that, I don't want to sound elitist here, but really experienced players have geometrical knowledge that some inexperienced players don't have.
That's pretty elitist.
It absolutely is. So, like, maybe I'm better at grade 11 geometry than you are, or something like that. But if
so
I
is
say,
that. That was pretty elitist, too. You don't know how fucking good at geometry
I am. Grade 11 in Canada or grade 11 in the U.S.?
Grade 11. Oh. Grade 11 in Canada or third-year university in the U.S., whatever you want to say.
It's the same thing, it's just metric.
So they call it college.
If I'm Dave Beauchamp, I can just say, like, I'm going to move these things here. And Rich, you're going to have to accept that they're possible. And Rich is going to be like, does that fit That's there? And Dave's going to be like, obviously it does. I've played this formation, this list a million times. I know exactly how these models are going to interact. I can see with the laser that is my eyes exactly what trajectory that model moves on. And maybe Greg is in the same position. Maybe Greg is quite aware of exactly how his models are going to be placed. But if I'm an intermediate player, or if I'm someone like Philippe or Nick were describing, where you're sort of an average player, those proxy bases are letting you see those things that Dave sees really intuitively. And if you change the culture and you say, Dave, don't put down those proxy bases, Dave doesn't stop winning his games. Mm. He just suddenly alienates a person who doesn't understand what he's saying. So what Dave is doing in that he's being cleaner is he's doing exactly the same thing he's quite aware that he can do, but he's doing it in a way that demonstrates to you, who maybe doesn't have that same level of awareness, exactly what's going on. I just played a game with Trevor Attridge, Trevi the Great, who runs a great channel and is an amazing dude.
Trevi the So-So.
Shots fired.
So, in a circumstance under which, against most players, I would have had to put down four proxy bases, I said to Trevi, this one charges this way, this one charges this way, this one charges this way, this one charges this way. None of them clip each other and those movements work. And Trevi just said, yep, I get it. Totally makes sense to me. And most players would be like, can you do that? And I'd have to stop and put down those proxy bases. So in an environment where I'm playing against somebody of exactly the same skill level as me, although Trevi's probably better than me, although I did win.
Hey, John, I think that's also elitist.
That's pretty elitist.
Sure fucking is.
But you beat Trevi, right?
So I guess elitist that's, with a reason?
You beat him, right?
Oh, yeah.
I believe the word is reasonably elitist.
Reasonably elitist. I think that's my new call sign. Yeah. So, I mean, in an environment where you're playing against somebody who's exactly the same ability as you, and he was exactly the same understanding of the game and wants to be sporting about it, I don't think there's a reason for really any proxy bases at all. And as soon as you play with somebody who doesn't understand geometry the same way as you, you need a punch. Like, I can say I'm going to charge this Storm Lance through this rough terrain for this portion of its movement. And if I can't put a proxy base down at the point where it enters the rough terrain and a point where it exits the rough terrain, I can eyeball it and tell you the amount that it is, or I can tell you exactly the amount that it is, and you can just believe me, I guess, which isn't really a great environment. Go ahead.
One of the things I do with newer players is, say I have something with countercharge, I will put a 6-inch measuring stick on that for their entire turn unless they don't want it. It's because they're newer. They won't remember it. I sure never did. It's for their benefit, not mine. But it makes the game make more sense to them. And that's kind of the point.
Proxy bases with really experienced players are mostly for you, not for them.
Yeah.
So the point I actually wanted to make about the CID process... there's a really, really good description of how to be involved in playtesting. And I've put this in front of some of our CID videos that we've run for the Arcane Assist podcast. I can plug shit too, John.
Is Arcane Assist seen on Sunday nights on twitch.tv/John?
It briefly was, but we canceled that time slot because there was a conflict of some kind.
Yes.
I think it was Game of Thrones.
The funny thing about that is we actually move our time because we ain't going up against Daenerys.
So the point I was making is there's a really robust explanation of how you playtest, which involves, like, it's not about who wins. It's about properly litmus testing these models. You know, reverse activations, back up on things, play extremely amicably, be really forgiving, tell your opponents, are you sure you want to do that? It seems like this might be more tactically optimal because you want to get the most out of the models that you're engaging in. So the CID process is exactly the wrong place to rigorously test a convention about how you play the game that is dependent on the kindness of opponents. Mm. So when you put yourself in an environment where Phil and I are playing and we're testing out this whole proxy-based thing and we're testing out SteamRally 2017 and he says, of course, as your opponent, I will let you place a marker. Please, by all means. Oh, yes, Tim, that looks like it's certainly in. I know you know. You're great at this game. Please continue.
That sounds like me.
It sounds exactly
That's
like
pretty
him.
Elitist.
And then 3 months later, I play against Nick. And Nick's not, but Nick's a dick. And I go to play with him.
It's not that far off.
And Nick is like, I don't think that's in. And I'm like, okay, well, here's one proxy base that gives you some idea of where I may or may not be in. And you said, no, it's not. I'm like, okay, I call a judge. And is that judge allowed to use more than one proxy base? Because if they are, I'm calling them for every fucking measurement, again with Nick. And that's pretty rough because as an adjudicator, if I can step out of the player perspective for a moment.
Adjudicator? Oh, okay.
Sorry. I just have, that's like, this throat thing is really killing me. As an adjudicator, that's extremely taxing on event organizer resources if in the game that I have to play with Nick, who is going to be really tight about everything, in an environment where normally I can say, this is how this works, you have to agree because the measurements are really obvious, I no longer have that power. I now have to call over a judge to demonstrate to Nick in every case that's the case. And as a judge, I'm telling you, the way I'm going to do that is with multiple proxy bases. Yeah. I have to, because that's the best and easiest way to clearly demonstrate that thing. So if you're giving tools to adjudicators that aren't available to players, you're putting an immense tax on the resources of adjudicators. Right now, Agatha, Matt, and myself are three judges that run the Southern Ontario Open Masters that has 116 players. And we get a judge call a handful of times and we wander over to that table and we fix that problem for them, but often they can fix it themselves. If every single Nick at a tournament requires every single opponent playing against a Nick to, I don't know why you're the dick in this example. We all clearly know you're not, so I think it's okay.
Well.
Just for the record, it was one of his podcast co-hosts that said well. It was no one else.
I strive for a clean game, okay? It's not me.
I'm gonna let Tim, if you could wrap it up and wrap up your comment, and then
my whole point
hand
is
it over to
it's a lot to ask for judges, and then sorry.
Greg, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think if Nick's a dick, you're gonna have a problem whether it's one proxy base or a million proxy bases. I don't think that's the issue.
It's a matter of scale though, right?
Now you're just being elitist.
that was pretty elitist.
If you proxy base the whole thing out and Nick says no, that doesn't work, then a judge comes over.
Right, but as the judge in that example, I come over and the Tim says, this thing, and I say, that looks good, Nick, I'm sorry, this is successful. And if the judge comes over in this case, and I haven't done all that proxy-based work, and I haven't presented that option, the judge now spends 10 to 15, maybe 20 minutes doing that for me?
I suppose, but I just think that 95% of shit that happens on the table happens with your opponent's consent. Somebody at some point says, yes, you can do this, or no, you can't do this. Either you admit you can't do it, or your opponent doesn't admit that they can't do it. And whether you can have 100 million proxy bases or not, I was at Captain Con a year ago playing Bradigus, and I'm trying to slide into Butcher, and it was like, you know, grade 11 geometry. There's like a million tokens on the table and stuff like that. And we had to call judge over, and he had to call another judge over, and he had to call Hacksaw over. And half an hour later, he says no. And so, I mean, to me, I should have just said, you know, it's too close to call. I shouldn't even bother with this sort of nonsense.
Should you, though? Like, I mean, in that environment, there's a right and a wrong answer. Why should you just decide that because it's tough, you don't have to?
I don't think there was a right or wrong answer at that point. Somebody had to say yes or no.
Well, that's the difference in philosophy.
All right, I'm going to hand it over to Mark.
That's just like your opinion.
Just for statistics' sake, I would say for 116 players or so, we had maybe 5 to 10 judge calls around, where in like even just a year ago, that was much, much higher.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to leave that there. I'm going to hand it over to Mark Q.
So I just want to point out, you guys are all jerks for making me go after Tim.
you sat
we're
there.
We're literally all going after Tim.
It's so true.
What's the opposite of elitist?
Nick? So
that was actually pretty Nick of you.
Correct usage. Okay, so you guys are all being pretty level-headed about this, so I'm going to go on off a brief rant here. The implication by Privateer Press that they have given us this wonderful, elegant rule system where we can use proxies, where we don't have all of these arguments, which I have gotten into with a significant but consistent number of players. I'm not going to name any names, but there are a small number of players in the meta who every time I play them, or every time they're at a
certain
tournament.
Mark, this is a long story that you're telling us in that mic. Did you want to continue?
Incredibly long. Every time I play them, they're constantly mismeasuring things. Constantly. And so I've had situations where they banana charge or things like that. The Privateer Press proxy system has fixed all of that, and now they're taking it away. And so for me, the litmus test of the CID, which we've mentioned before, is the fact that whether the feedback is fervent enough that people will say, okay, yeah, maybe it was a bad idea to limit the number of proxies we're allowed. my knowledge, everybody has been saying approximately that. There's a couple people who are saying, like Greg, you know, it's not a big deal. Like Nick, who are saying, you know what, maybe a few more than one would be okay. But the majority seem to be saying that the proxies have made the game better, cleaner, more efficient. Just you cut down the number of arguments. And
so the majority of the vocal minority, potentially. We don't know. That's the thing.
I cannot follow that at all.
I only get to take
it. It's the vocals, right?
I'm going to counter that, and I only get to counter a couple of things because I'm supposed to be a moderator. But
go for it.
The problem with saying that we're going to trust something like the CID system is much like any other moment of trust. By saying we're trusting the CID system, that means we're going to trust the vocal minority to make those changes and
right.
to volunteer those changes to a certain degree. We have to take on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you desire to change whatever it is that they're saying is wrong, then you have to become part of said vocal minority. If you're not going to become part of the said vocal minority, then you're part of the problem at that point. That's part of the trust factor.
Excellent.
Do you think that there's a part of the community that's maybe circumventing CID and going straight to the source?
Well, I think there may be, but that might have to do with the petition. So,
oh God,
that's a whole other problem.
Next topic.
Before we finish up, I'm going to let Mark finish his statement.
Yeah. So basically, to me, Privateer Press has given us an incredible tool set. They're trying to take it back. I don't react well with that. We'll see what ends up happening. Is really the long and short of that. I think the game is much much better with the tools presented to us currently, and if they take that away, I'm going to be upset. And when I run tournaments, I'm going to be upset by the fact that, you know, I have this wonderful thing that I'm not allowed to do, and it kind of sucks. I also want to say very, very briefly that I think Privateer Press historically has always played a different game than the tournament environments, and so they test differently to some extent, because they don't just concern themselves with the tournament. They have to concern themselves with casual play and all that sort of stuff. And it does make sense that they're saying, okay, for casual play, we want people to set up to the table and for the table to be beautiful. We want three-dimensional terrain on there. We want people to be able to say, oh, these are all the cool explosions and things that are happening, and, you know, Warjack's being ripped to shreds. That's neat. But when it gets to a tournament setting, to have the Steamroller, which is kind of the de facto, you know, rule set for every tournament, to say, well, okay, we want stuff to look cool, it jives me the wrong way.
Show me on the proxy base where the bad CID touched you.
It touched me right here on Sundays at 5 p.m. on
7 p.m. Central Time, twitch.tv/menoffjohn. And if you join the Patreon at patreon.com/menoffjohn, at the $2 level, you get a magnet
there
with our logo on it so you can advertise for free.
I'd just like to remind you all that you can catch Menoff John for free without having to do any Patreon or any of that crap on the Moose Machine Network, which shows 24 hours a day.
Okay.
So I'm going to pass it on to Fraser, who has... Rich, did you want to stop? For
yes, second? Real quick. Yeah. Number one, I think...
You're wrong and you dress funny.
I don't know. Wow. I'm just American. That's okay. I don't know who does tech on your podcast, and they almost hate you for banging the table all the time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Only one American made the top eight.
I apologize for my country again today. I don't know what else you want from me.
Rich, before you go on too long, did you want to talk about this beer? Because
we have a new one here. This is also from Crooked Mile. This is Lanark and
Lanark, which is Lanark, the county I'm from, yo.
Lanark Maple Brown. And I had to look this up because this is very new. It is so new. It's not on the website, and there are no reviews, descriptions, or anything yet. Lanark Maple Brown, 4.5%, 21 IPUs. So this is not going to be bitter at all. What's interesting is Lanark Maple Syrup is from a conglomerate area that makes this specific maple syrup that's used in this beer. So that's kind of cool.
So I can tell you a little bit about this because it's a Crooked Mile beer. It's pretty cool. They actually use the maple sap to help as a replacement for the water in the beer. So kind of a cool, interesting thing, which makes it a little bit smoother.
And there's sugar in it that the yeast will eat that also increase the fermentation. Yes.
So I'm going to send this over to Fraser. Fraser, how did this affect trolls, really? That's the real question.
Well, on the Trollblood Scrum, Wednesdays at 10 p.m.
Oh, God!
To Rich's point earlier, talking about how not necessarily newer players coming in. I mean, a lot of the newer players aren't necessarily even using proxies. So, I mean, I don't think it's affecting them.
Sure.
And when you go to tournaments, you're still not going to be, new players aren't using the proxies. So I don't think the impact is that huge. But my question is actually to the judges. If this rule comes into play and you've got two players that agree that they can use as many proxies as they want, do the judges have to penalize them? Can they complete that game? Like, where, how is this even going to be enforced if the judges aren't making that call?
I actually have a comment on that. It's not going to come to that because a judge in those circumstances, obviously, everyone's familiar with how the judge program's changing, at least from an outsider perspective.
Sorry, tell me how the judge program's changing?
You guys are going to be paid employees at major cons, is that correct?
Contract. The program already exists for people like Hacksaw.
Yeah, exactly.
Who work in the program, so it'll just be spread to more of the judges.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're an employee, you're going to do what the company tells you.
No, we're going to abide by the program that we
really
present. And we have to. But
that's awesome.
What are you saying that we're going to do?
It seems like we have I'm interpreting this wrong, but it seems like we have a conflict here. If the company wants to enforce how it's played, and you're going to do this differently, what happens?
So, Agatha can speak to this as well. Of course,
we're
both judges, but I'm an adjudicator of the Steamroller program and the Steamroller document. If something contains the Steamroller document's ruling on a particular issue, including how the game has to be played, it's a part of our responsibility to enforce the Steamroller document be used appropriately. So there's a complexity and a tension. So here's the complexity. There are things that player consent can cause at a table to happen. Like, if two players are having a dispute, and the judge document's response to that dispute is punitive, but the players agree to resolve something more amicably, that's fine. Player consent at the table reigns supreme, and it's my responsibility to respect the intention of both players, as long as I don't believe anyone involved is being abused by a power dynamic or pressure from one player. Example earlier today, I was playing the Ghost Fleet Mirror, which, by the way, is fucking miserable.
Yep. And, yes, it is.
I was there.
It was hard to watch, dude.
So my opponent, Benoit, had skipped his allocation step and moved into activations. And I said, Benoit, we're on a stream. There's a lot of pressure. We're undefeated in Masters. Do your fucking allocation. I won't take no for an answer. I don't want you to make mistakes. I want you to play the best game you've got.
You didn't say nearly that much.
I mean, there was a language barrier.
Pointed and grunted.
But my point is, that's resolution at the table that differs from the judge document version of the resolution. However, there are violations that are clearly not acceptable for the terms of Steamroller. If I sit down across from Nick, and Nick says, hey, Tim, can we just not play a scenario because like Caster Kill's more fun?
Yeah, that's something I would say.
Nick is a dick.
I didn't think we were playing 2017.
Oh.
Ooh, shots fired.
I suspect we'll get there. And I say, like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, that seems fine. As a judge, I'm just like, guys, you have to actually play the game. Like, the Steamroller document's here for a reason. Like, this is going to create all kinds of problems. And in the same vein, if the death clock rule is enforced and we just decide to pause our clock because we don't care what the judges say, I can DQ both players in that example. So if somebody says, I'm just not going to abide by the proxy base rule, and they're the exception to the community's feeling, I'll let that settle for a moment, then I have to take responsibility for that circumstance and give those players a warning about the behavior and ask them to engage in appropriate Steamroller decorum. It's very difficult to enforce a rule if no one else in the room agrees with you. So,
ooh, boy. It seems to be a very touchy area we're approaching.
I think probably the most valid point out of this argument at this point. But Fraser, I'm going to let you finish up if you had anything else.
No, that was it.
All right, and then I'm going to send it down one more.
I think we're all talking a lot about the same thing because we've kind of gone off the topic. That is the topic. What the issue is we're trying, at least Privateer Press is trying to apply something subjective and turn it into an objective rule. The subjective thing being how they feel they want the game to look and be played in terms of them trying to sell it and have it appear to people coming by and things like that, because it's their product. You want to sell it. We as players want them to sell it because then we have a larger community. Fantastic, right? However, we have been told objectively we can measure anything at any time. What you want to do is find a happy medium. The problem being you're not ever going to make everyone happy, so there's always going to be a problem. You end up with things like, okay, you can have one proxy base. Well, there's my completely subjective choice of one, someone's always going to have a problem with one. Why not three? Why not five?
But I really
why not
six
one proxy base
one
that's
thing?
Actually two different base sizes next to each other? What is a proxy base at that point if there's six different things stuck together or who knows what?
Can I give my my theory or solution on this, whatever? I think what it may end up ultimately happening anyway, but just my idea for this is to keep all of the, well, can we use one, can we use four, can we use this, can we use that, whatever. When a unit activates, and I say unit, I mean unit, model, caster, jack, whatever, a thing. When a thing activates, you may proxy base any thing in that thing, and also your caster. When that thing is done, pick your shit off the table. That's it.
Where does one thing end and another begin?
What is activating? That's what it is.
I activate part my of unit. The activation.
So all of it. The whole thing. So if you have a 10-man
unit...
So
in other words, there's no rule.
What about no. It's model those models in the thing you're activating.
What about
that's
out of
it.
Activation movement?
It's you're not activating, about, so it doesn't count. You can't proxy
one,
it.
When you're talking about one thing, okay, and... Let's be clear. I'm on the whatever the rule ends up being is what we're going to have to follow.
That's of course.
I have opinions on it.
Actually, like sort things, of. And that's another thing
like
I want to
Like most things
up.
On the internet, opinions don't matter for shit.
My own the truest included, statement my own included, this evening, right there.
So, if whatever the rule is, we're going to end up having to follow it unless there's, you know, unless we make change, which we can do.
Are you starting a coup?
I am.
I mean, you could
like,
start
maybe a petition. Like,
yeah.
I'm just
no. The issue. The issue is. You're talking about saying you activate that unit. What impacts that unit on? Just about everything on the table impacts that unit.
Oh,
so where
course.
Do you draw the line is where you can no longer measure. That is what I'm talking about with a subjective measure. You're trying to apply a subjective measure to an objective rule set. So there's always going to be dissent. There's always going, and that doesn't matter what level. That's why we have judges who have to make callings. What are they making it on? What the information that they have available. We're talking about using widgets and how they're precise. Well, they're only as precise as how you lay them down.
This is also
lay down
very
your
true.
Precise
yes.
measuring
yes.
widget and don't nudge a thing ever. Do it.
Hard,
don't
right?
nudge the terrain.
Oh, it's that hard.
Don't
oh,
nudge
is.
The table. Don't nudge the widget after you place it. Don't nudge the model. Don't nudge the unit.
It can be.
Don't breathe on it.
No, it's exactly. No, you bring up a very good point. Ideally, this game is played in a vacuum where no one breathes, no one touches the table, no one moves models. But we're humans.
Right. That
yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking game.
So vast.
That sounds kind of elitist.
No, yeah. I don't wish.
That was kind of elitist.
I don't wish vassal upon anyone.
No. It's been great taken.
Hey, Will, go ahead.
I'm just gonna let you finish your thoughts. So, whatever you want to close there.
Aggie talked about how the rule set is clean. We can apply our widgets and things like that to make the game as clean as possible. And I agree, I think, with most of the people here that we feel with the use of our templates and widgets and proxy bases, the game has become cleaner and helped elevate people like myself who aren't as good as the game to a little bit higher level of cleaner play and accuracy and skill because we're able to refine our measurement and our ability to see the table. Right?
You feel good doing it. Like, you can feel good doing
it. Oh, you have no idea
it.
How good I feel about it. whoa.
Yeah.
All right? But it's the subjectivity, I think, is the issue. And I think that's where all of the contention and strong feelings come from is because the subjectivity of what we have to or what is going to be applied, there's always going to be an argument.
Could it also be that most of us were surprised by this because we didn't think it was a problem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. No. If you wanted to see evidence. Okay.
So I do want to pull this back because, Tim, you did raise your hand to make a comment.
Sorry, I was just going to, if you don't mind me responding a little bit to what Rich said before, I've heard that notion of activation as a solution to the problem a lot. Some people are like, well, I want to charge my unit of storm lances and I want to ensure that they have room to do the striker 2 feet. And when I charge them, I don't want them to be on top of each other. Like, can I please make my impact attacks followed by my movement of my charge, followed by my these models can all fit around this base? And that is a solution to that problem. What it says you can't do, and maybe this is intentional by your suggestion, is plan out your Stormlands activation, plan out some of the things in your turn, and then say, nope, I'm not going to do that, scrap that whole plan, and move on to something else.
Right.
So that's restrictive in its own way. My prompt rebuttal to it, and there are many, but I'll just give you one, is I activate my unit of Shifting Stones to teleport Loki. Can't use any proxy bases there, because that's a problem.
For what?
Well, because he's activating the Shifting Stones, and so he'd have to use a proxy for Loki, but Loki's not activating. He's activating the Shifting Stones, and the Shifting Stones
Why do you have to use a proxy for Loki?
Because he wants to know exactly where Loki's going to go.
No, it's actually, yes, you're correct. It's by design.
Who knew we needed lawyers?
Also, I just want to briefly point out that this conversation has been so wonderfully heated that we've actually scared off Greg.
That's amazing.
Wow. He's Holy gone.
Shit.
Yeah.
I think he went to get pizza.
Oh, okay. Or he went to get pizza.
He's getting it for everyone. It's okay.
I'm going to put a hold to comments. I'm going to let Banky finish.
Pizza is the best proxy.
So my point is that in a world in which Circle cannot proxy base things out of activation, they are not as good as they are now.
I just want to change that to one. In a world where Circle can't proxy all of their movements.
Will went exactly where I was thinking.
Just for the record, we've been having a very detailed discussion about the abuses in the number of brushes one can use when painting. And we've come up with the solution is a piece of duct tape around two brushes, or else wet blending would go away.
Yes.
So that is allowed.
All right.
Two-brush blending, but only with the consent of your fellow painters?
And with duct tape.
And you're not allowed to talk about the use of spit.
And your significant other as well. You're licking them, after all.
Yeah, that is true. Whoa. All right. So, Tim, do you feel that you finished your argument? Did you have anything to kind of counter?
My point is just that if Circle's worse, and that's just how the world works, that's not the end of the world.
It's definitely not. I'm okay with that.
We're all okay with Circle being worse.
But my point is...
Hear.
I feel like it's often a very
Circle
insulated...
didn't make it into top 8.
Fair enough. I feel like
that's elitist.
It's often a very insulated opinion to believe that you can resolve all of the tension created by this change by limiting it to activations.
Yeah.
This is just like,
I agree.
Steamroller would be better if you banned Theme Forces, but it's a variant. People are looking for really simple solutions to complex problems. Yeah. And I think that either you need a culture shift that allows Privateer Press to have the game look the way that they want, or you need a very specifically arrayed and stipulatively defined list of all of the things that you can and can't do to present a game that is balanced and looks good. And I don't think you can do that with simple answers to a complex problem.
Well, and I think that's what it really boils down to, is that this is a ridiculously complex problem that Privateer Press is trying to deal with, judges are trying to deal with, we as the community are trying to deal with, and the CID is trying to deal with. And I don't think there's an easy answer. I think that... I'd like to say that I still believe it's a litmus test to a certain degree. That what the idea... And I think this goes back to Menoth John's original comment that some of the goal of the CID...
What the fuck did I say?
I know. Give the guy two beers and it's all downhill from there.
I think he said on Sunday nights.
At 7 p.m. on twitch.tv/MenothJohn.
It's incredible. You just like the half... The first half of the sentence, and you just carry it on.
So the thing was, is that the original comment was that some of this was to test the feeling of the community, and this was a wonderful way to test the feelings of the community because it's still in a testing phase. So we don't know anything until this comes out. Let's hope that in the next month or so that it comes out. All right. So.
I actually wanted to comment on that, and it came up earlier. The CID is interesting in that I can't help but take notice and draw parallels to what happened in 40K.
Don't do it.
I know. I'm going there.
Boo.
I'm not saying we want it to happen. I'm not saying anyone wants it or doesn't want it to happen, whatever. And I sincerely hope Privateer realizes this. If the ultimate end-all document of this is, say the majority of the player base does not agree with this. Say the majority of the people running tournaments, not necessarily judges, but judges included and everyone else, does not agree with how it is. We all know what will happen. And that will be, there will be a separate set of rules like ITC. I, for one, do not want that to happen, but I think it could.
All right, we're going to drop this topic now because I think we've managed to kind of
manhandle
it to every different topic that it gets. What I want to end it,
woman handle.
And woman handle.
Person handle.
As Mike Bylak brought up in the CID,
we just handled
make sure
it. You don't have to manhandle
sides,
anything.
Aggressively
okay.
Fondling.
Yeah, fondling.
I want to end tonight's conversation on a positive note, and I think we all have positive feelings towards this.
Fondling?
Yes.
Consensual.
This is the problem with Aggie showing up after the rules were given for the round table system is going to work. So what I want to do is end on a positive note. I think we all can concur to a certain degree that the third edition has done great things for the game and that we're all very happy with the state of the game and that we see a path forward. What is, and we're going to do a straight up roundtable on this one, what is the thing that you look forward to most in the coming year or years as far as the game system, as what you've seen coming down the road, whether it's a model, a faction, a rule set? I'm going to start with Tim. Where's your positive? What's the thing that you're looking forward to most?
This is still my favorite war game. This is still my favorite game. This is still my favorite source of meeting people and engaging with the community. I love everything about War Machine and Hordes, and every once in a while, because I love it so much and I'm so passionate about it, I find something to latch on to criticize really aggressively. I'm going to Belgium to captain one of Canada's teams for the WTC this year.
Woo.
That's one of the things I'm extremely excited about. I'm really, really proud of where our team's going. Three out of the five members of our Canadian WTC team, my Canadian WTC team, made the top eight at the Southern Ontario Open Masters. We've been practicing really hard, and we are the third team for Canada this year, so we're the underdogs. And we've been working really, really hard and really, really passionately. And this is still the game that if you decide you want to be really good at it and you want to put the effort in, you want to find appropriate mentors and you want to focus on the content you can and you want to learn how to just get good, you can, and you'll see real success with it and it'll take you far.
Mark Hughes.
What? What did you say about trolls?
Circle is not in the top eight. And trolls is.
All right, Mark Q. Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
So the thing I am most looking forward to is that Signar is going to continue being as broken as hell, and everything we get will be demonstrably better than everything that Retribution gets, everything that Crix gets. I'm so happy about this. You guys have no idea.
I think there's a word for this. It's elitist.
That's kind of elitist.
I'm not going to say there's a Stormlands change coming.
But you're not going to say it?
There might be a storm coming.
Storm's brewing.
Okay, but in all seriousness, every model Privateer Press has released over the last 6 months has been really exciting. I love Loki. I don't play Circle. I love that horrible thing that happened in Legion.
Azrael?
That's the one.
Oracles?
Yeah. Both.
You'll have to narrow that down.
Yeah. I mean, even Brickhouse. Brickhouse has been really exciting, and he's not a fantastic warjack. So I love the fact that they keep releasing really new, really exciting models that I just want to put on my table and, you know, smash them and make little
pew-pews. You're painting, right, because you don't play anymore.
Silence. Silence, peon.
And what's wrong with painting?
All in on Armada 2017. Yeah.
I do love Armada. But despite the fact that I play other miniature games, I still find War Machine to be extremely exciting. I love, you know, just playing the game, and I love how balanced and wonderful the community is, and I'm looking forward to actually getting more table time. So,
Fraser, go ahead.
Well, as I was entering my games into the Battle Reporter.
You're learning my
That would be WMH. BattleReporter.com or available in the Android store.
Ooh.
Soon to be on Apple.
You were learning while my son.
Yeah, there we go. And as I was co-hosting the Trollblood Scrum on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. So to echo both Tim and Mark's pieces, it's the community that really gets me excited about this. The fact that we can all sit around and that you can go anywhere in these tournaments and be able to talk to people. So that to me is one thing. The quality of the models themselves, like the last few Troll releases, have been just gorgeous. Heads and tails above what they've done in the past. They keep improving their game. That, as a hobbyist, it's fantastic. It'll keep me in the game for a very long time, solely based on the quality of the models. As a Troll player, I like what they're doing with the CID with the War Wagon. I want them to do that more with the faction, because right now we're not really feeling the love, and I think we need to. There's still a little... There's a little bit of saltiness on the on the Troll side. Some of it's deserved. Some of it is just a matter of maybe looking at something different. But that's what the game challenges you with. It challenges you to look at models you don't normally play and see what you can do, and forces you in that thing. So that's another thing I like about the game. So
I think Skinner.
I think it's good. Yeah, Skinner was 2017 was supposed to be the year of Skinner, but it never happened.
Tragic.
The year is young yet, sir.
Skinner CID coming.
What I really like is a constant evolution. So we have some, you know, you have your consistency of faction, but the tournament format slowly changes. The releases slowly change your factions, and how things interact are what I enjoy about the game. the fact that it never feels, stagnant, and it never, I shouldn't say never because I played against Haley too today. It never feels like winning a game is unachievable. If you play your cards right, you can win the game. Some of us don't ever hold any cards. That's a different story altogether. But no, the evolution of the game is what keeps it exciting. And the fact that now, even with all the salt, and I know I contribute to it as well, with the CID, that we can all contribute to that change and be a positive force in the game that we all love, no matter what level. Even if it's just something insofar as we feel that we're contributing. I think that that's important. It keeps the community engaged. We know that the company is engaged. And I think that only speaks good things.
Go to Agatha. Sorry.
Ah, you almost forgot about me.
You were ducked behind everybody. Go ahead.
For me, as a community organizer first and a player second, and I've admitted that because I almost never play games, there was a lot of really, honestly, crappy changes that happened. There was the loss of the forums, the PG program. But if that's the worst that's going to happen, and they've said that is the worst that's going to happen to the community, we're doing pretty well. We've gotten the most people we've ever had at the Sioux. The last few conventions have been awesome. People are still great. We are going to make what we make of it. The game I'm happy with, I've honestly not been able to really play it as much as I probably should, but that doesn't matter because I like the people in it, and they're still the best people I know in any war game, in any miniature game, in any board game or whatever. This is still the best community we've got. So why would you ever leave?
Oh, well, I get to say something?
Oh. May as well introduce yourself since we don't know who you are.
All right, cool. The tools are there with the coming...
He is the community, guys.
I am. The coming of the CID and what seems to be a new era.
I'm sorry. What was your name again?
My name is.
Community member number three.
Oh yeah, Red Down Duke, not on camera. So yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, we found Anonymous.
So yeah. With the CID and everything, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the next couple months. And sorry, what?
Still hasn't said your name.
Oh, it's Vincent.
There you go.
Hi, Vincent.
Hi, Vincent. Welcome.
I'm from the same podcast as Phil.
Oh, nice.
He's from R7, sadly.
I don't know if you want to admit that at this point.
It's really shameful.
Sorry, Vincent.
You don't want to be associated with me.
I mean, Phil just say, I don't even know this guy.
Yeah. Sleep on a bench in the mall.
It's a nice bench.
Let's ask the homeless about War Machine.
Yeah, cool. Sorry, everybody. Let's
My just, turn?
Go ahead.
Cool. All right. So, yeah, with the CID and like what seems to be a breath of fresh air coming from Proprietary Press, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the next couple months/years, like where the game's going to be like the best it's ever been and the closest it's ever been to being like just right.
Awesome. Nick, go ahead.
After the PG program got shut down and the forums got shut down,
totally my fault.
Probably. There was a certain Preparatory Press member that did say there's no more bombshells coming this year, and then Widget Gate happened. So it's a hard time trusting that nothing is going to go wrong sometimes. But anyway, I love War Machine. It's like the most fun game I've ever played. It's really fun, and CID is something that is really, really interesting to me. I really enjoy looking at the new playtest models coming. So the Battle Engines in particular, like, they recognize that these are models that were underrepresented in competitive play or in play in general, and they are taking a look at them and they're increasing their power level and all that. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what gets in there next, kind of thing. Dester CID 2017.
Oh, God, yes. Desters.
But just in general, you know, it's really exciting to see all these dynamic changes coming to the game and continuous improvement, making it better as it goes along. And yeah,
go ahead, Philip.
Well, for Desters, just give them ambush. That seems to work with everything else.
Yeah.
You can just drop the mic and walk away.
Have you guys ever seen the flowchart for Dusters?
No, I have not.
It's incredible.
I made that. I made that.
Before we go on.
Wait, who made that?
That's Nick's flowchart.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
I get a message from Nick at 10:30 at night, and he's like, I just want to run some things by you regarding Duster activations. And I'm like, fuck right off.
All right. Philippe, go ahead. Finish up what you're saying.
But before, yeah, they'll make mistakes. Oh, sorry.
It wasn't at 10 o'clock at night.
T-shirt?
It was at work.
Just give it ambush.
Make it an ambush. Hashtag.
Yes.
They're going to make mistakes, but like I said earlier, the main thing is that they gave themselves the tools to fix them. And I think the community is great enough, the game's great enough, that it's worth just, you know, giving them a shot and staying along for the ride. That being said, I kind of agree with Fraser. I kind of hope they're going to fix Roll Blood at some point. Not so much on a power level curve, but not being boring to play curve. Because I played Troll for the longest time. I switched faction not long ago. And wow.
Yeah, you played Trolls at the Southern Ontario Open last year, right?
Well, I've been playing Troll Blood for 5 years. And ever since I switched to Retribution, I basically have a spring in my step here. It's crazy.
He's not wrong. I'm in exactly the same
boat. Changing any faction has that effect, though.
I do think that it's really easy to forget that Privateer Press might be capitalized, but like the people are just people.
Yeah.
And having met them, they're like you and I. They make mistakes. They make triumphs. You know, they're just
people. I think the rule to go by is it's still a small company. It's still just a small bunch of people in a small company. It's not this giant conglomerate that we sometimes vision in our heads of 40 people at a desk going. Murr, murr, murr. All right, Manoth John, go ahead.
I think the thing I'm most looking forward to is Sunday nights on twitch.tv/menoffjohn, where you can find out all your hobby tips from someone who really doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, but knows some really good painters. In all seriousness, I agree with a lot of the same sentiment that some of the other people have seen here. I'm a big believer in data, and the more data that you can get, the better chance you have of perfecting what you're trying to achieve. And so there's a few things. I mean, everybody knows I've had my run-ins with Privateer Press. And a lot of that was self-induced gunshot wounds because I was kind of a dick for a long time.
You?
Yeah.
What?
No.
Was? Yeah.
No,
was?
I don't. Yeah. I don't
like to think I'm better. But
President for life, ladies
there
and gentlemen.
There is a president that can actually admit he's a dick.
Topical.
But I have a lot of faith in what the Wills are doing. Mm. And I think that when they lost DC for whatever reason and they brought in Will, they brought in somebody that can break this game in half. And I don't know if anybody can break the game like Will can. I mean, that guy can see combos in his sleep. So I think that...
Will?
Pagani.
There's so many.
Yeah. There's a lot of Will.
When you're talking about somebody
you combine that with the energy that Hungerford and Pagani are bringing to that organization. It is a palpably different feeling company. And I hope that they will continue to allow those guys a strong voice in the development process. So what am I excited about? I'm excited for another full year of the Will Show, running this CID.
Why, thank you. I mean, sorry. Why?
I think it's going to be a fun year.
All right, I'm going to leave this to Rich to kind of wrap this up, buddy, because you started it, you end it. Well, I'll end it, but you can wrap it.
I can sort of end it. Yeah. Okay. I'm looking... I started playing this game after I was really getting sick of 40K. And that was back in 2012. I should know this because it's the year I got married. I actually, believe it or not, I started
happily
playing War Machine
after.
Because of a discussion at my wedding with a couple people I seated with each other.
Wow.
The game itself has brought, let's be real here. I've met some amazing people. I've gone to some amazing places. And I started a podcast. It's done more for me than any other miniature game has that I've played.
Do you want to tell us when this podcast airs?
No, mine doesn't stream live, so sorry. however, on facebook.com/beermachine716.
716?
Yeah, that's our area code. Because someone else took Beer Machine.
I just assumed there was already 715 of them.
also true. This game is incredible, and I think we make the best of the things that are controversial, and I think we put a good spin on them, maybe a bad spin. Maybe a bad spin for ratings. Wait, Greg already left. I think it's a good thing overall, and we all help the process, and we are all supportive of where the game goes. That being said, I'm looking forward to 2017 finishing CID and us getting some concrete good stuff. I think it's going to be great. I, for one, am extremely happy. I will never have to play Incursion again.
Yay!
Never say never.
We're all on one. Don't even start that. At least we're all on the same page for that. And I'm looking forward to going back to Retribution. Sorry, Fraser.
Incursion Ooh. 2017 has three rectangles. One of them disappears.
If I see a zone disappear, I'm going to lose it. That being said, I think I speak for all of us. I think I speak for all of us here that we all enjoy being the talking heads of this game. And it would be fun, but it wouldn't be nearly as fun if people didn't actually listen and respond to what we said. So
that's true.
Thank you if you listen to me.
You
don't have a podcast, Aggie. It's okay.
She's listened to me without it. That's more power than anyone.
She just walks in a room and takes over a podcast.
This is also very true.
Queen of all podcasts.
So go ahead. Or I'll go ahead. Thank you, everyone who was joining us live in the chat room. I had a couple great comments in there and discussions about two brush blending. And fortunately, not chocolate milk this time.
That's why we're chocolate milk.
Oh, listen to the last Death Clock has 60 minutes. You'll see. And with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Will for our closing remarks.
Well, I think the thing I look forward to most is being part of a community, and I think we can all agree with that. I think that's kind of what we all said in one way or another. And the community has given all of us a voice, which not a lot of people get a chance to do in their lifetime. And I think that's really important to remember. We are a small community and a vocal community, and that and being a podcaster is a wonderful part of what I do as part of that community. I think it's part of what we all do, and I think we're all excited about how that continues. I think at this table in particular will vouch that none of us are going anywhere, and we're going to continue being a voice. What's amazing is even that we had differing opinions at this table. Each and every one of you, I consider a friend, a best friend, even though some of us only met in person for the first time in the last couple of weeks. I think that's the most important thing about community building, and that's the most important thing about what War Machine has brought to my life. So I'm going to end this here. I want to thank everybody who is part of the Moose Machine Network, who is part of their own podcast, and who had inspired me to do my own podcast and create this network along with George and Jason and everybody else.
You're welcome.
That may be elitist.
That was a little elitist.
That's definitely elitist.
#elitist.
That was pretty elitist.
And I want to thank all the people that come to our events, that come to Tim's events, and for the fact that some of these people traveled a long, long way to be here.
I think my events?
And Aggie's events. And if you haven't gone to a Kingston event yet, you really should. If you like low ceilings and cheap pizza,
What's a Kingston? That's like metric Lewiston, right?
They listen to a lot of reggae kind there.
Remember, if you're last place at one of our events, primalpoodle.com will paint you a model.
That was a really good. That was like a double. Yeah, nice work. Next level. All right. That was next level. Okay, so I want to end it here tonight. I hope everybody who was watching the stream live or is listening to this podcast later, because we're going to put it on Beer Machine, we're going to put it on Moose Machine, and everybody else who is part of this podcast will be welcome to put it wherever you like. It'll be on the Muzon Minis Network.
Butthole.
There'll be a meme about that.
That's under CID, guys.
Floppy donkey dicks.
There'll be a meme about that. Anyway, let's get back to what I was going to say was I want to thank everybody for joining us here at the roundtable. I know that this is a difficult thing to do, and I know that the community may or may not agree with our opinions, and that's part of what is wonderful with what just happened here at this table. We are going to wrap it up right here. I want to thank Crooked Mile for bringing us beer. I want to thank every podcast for being a part of this and for spreading the word around. If you are not a subscriber of any of these podcasts, go find them. If you are not a subscriber... You should be, because this is where you're going to get great opinions. And I'm not going to shout out to any just one podcast. There's a lot of them here. I want to make sure you subscribe to every single one of them. You can find almost all of us on Facebook, I think, at this point.
Especially yes. Painting with Men Off John Cena Sunday nights.
He can't even say it with a straight face.
All right. And from the hottest room at the SOO, I'm going to call this a close. Thank you very much, Rich, for handling the boards over there.
You're very welcome.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Dice down.
Dice down.